Mr. King, Reel 7. A few questions about the cadres that you were involved in, Mr. King. Where were these recruits or people that were coming on the course, where were they coming from?
Well, as I recall, the recruits were recommended as potential NCOs from the companies, you know, at that time within Ransford. So, you know, as I said, you had recruits from there was four companies, I recall, in Ransford, A, B, C and D. And most of the potential recruits were recommended from those companies. But we did get a case of other people in who seemed to be maybe territorial, you know, ex-territorial unit members. And that's how it started, as far as I'm aware, as a venue for potential NCOs, actually. You want to be trained more skill. You want to give them more skill, I suppose. Yeah.
Your particular expertise was on the weapons side of this training, was it?
Well, I was, you know, I say I tended to instruct more on the weapons, of course, yes. But we also, I'll tell you what, we did training on parade ground routines, you know, drill routines, and you used to split them into pairs, and then you one pair was on one side of the parade ground and the other one was on the other, set at a distance maybe about 20 yards apart, you know, opposite each other up the parade ground, maybe about 20 people on the course, or there'd be more than that, maybe 30 people on the course, and you were then giving each other commands, so it was to train your voice, in fact, you know, to make you to sort of get you shout harder so they could hear you. And that's in fact how they train people to give orders of command. And then of course you got split them up into bigger units, and then you did drill manoeuvres with these units in order just to really, it wasn't to teach you those drill, it was to teach you how to use your voice, actually, in commands. And I think at that time, I did what they call a pull-aim test. If I recall, it was pulling sort of square pegs into square holes and that sort of thing. And a written questionnaire. And as a result of that, I was recommended for an accelerated promotion as a result of that, doing that test. I don't know why, but that was the result anyway.
This was a written test, was it?
Yeah, well, both written and oral.
And what did it cover?
Well, it seemed to it covered all sorts at the time. It was just sort of, as I recall, it was more than just general knowledge and common sense, you know, common sense questions, really. It wasn't particularly questions about the army. It wasn't, I don't think it was in particularly at army knowledge. It was just sort of general common sense questions, if I recall. Of course, it's so long ago now.
And this is, because you passed it successfully, as you say, earmarked you for accelerated promotion. And by accelerated, that mean almost immediately?
Well, as it happens, it did happen almost immediately because I was a corporal then, if I recall, and the weapon training sergeant in the 16th Battalion they were using the mortar, the 2-inch mortar, and whether the mortar had gone off in the barrel or whether it was sighted, I understood later on from all the gossip that it had been sighted under a tray, and it set the mortar had gone off and the bomb had exploded, and anyway the sergeant unfortunately was killed, and as a result of that, of course, I was sent down to Shorncliffe Barracks, where I reported as the new weapon training sergeant, and I was promoted straight up from full corporal to full sergeant, which was very, very unusual, I suppose. But anyway, that's what happened. I was promoted straight up from full corporal to full sergeant, and then I was titled. Actually, the weapon training sergeant, that was the title. He also had a weapon training officer.
We'll come to that, of course, in due course of time. How long did the particular cadre last for the group?
About 6 weeks. I think it was about a 6 weeks course. Very, very concentrated, where everybody was advised to read as much of the army pamphlets, you know, the weapon training pamphlets and the training pamphlets, as they could. And then, of course, it was all split up into about 3/4 hour periods or something like that, when there was about four of us, I think, if I recall. There was a Sergeant Holcroft, who I couldn't remember his name actually last time, but I've remembered it since. He was one of the sergeants, and a Sergeant Scales was another one, and there was me. Now I was corporal, of course. I can't recall who else there was. But we used to do, it was just like being in school, as far as the we were concerned. We were the instructors, and we had pupils, and that was it. And we just had a limited number of pupils, maybe about 10 at a time. They weren't very big classes. And of course, I used to do weapon training mostly on the Bren and grenades. You know, the old Mills bombs, 36 grenades, which were about the only ones at that time. The Bakelite ones were coming in just about that time. So we had to sort of swat up on anything new that was coming in order to teach somebody else, you know. It was both educational as far as I was concerned, but it meant a hell of a lot of work in order to keep abreast of any new weapons that were coming out or any new information that was coming out. In order to be able to teach other people, you know, and that was it, you know.
I was going to ask you if other new weapons were coming into the, obviously into the army, yeah, but obviously into you as well as a.
Well, I think it would be about
a trainer.
I think it would be about this time that we started getting giving instruction on the Tommy gun, which had the round barrel, of course, you know, and. Very high velocity, and that was rather interesting. That we had to sort of maybe have a crash course among ourselves, among the instructors, you know, to learn as much as we could about it off the pamphlets and on using the actual gun, and then going out and instructing on it, which was. It was particularly hard at that time, I remember, you know, it was all, I seemed to have my head buried in a book while they buried in pamphlets. When I wasn't sort of instructing, I was, had my head buried in pamphlets, of course.
What was it like as a weapon, this new Tommy gun, as far as you were concerned?
Well, you know, nobody seemed to be very keen on it, actually. It wasn't in, if I remember, it didn't seem to get to be in general issue. It was sort of tried and then, for some reason, discarded, you know. And it didn't seem to be in general issue. Then we got the Piat, you know, the Piat, the projectile infantry anti-tank, I think it was the full title. And we used to do instruction on that as well, of course.
Was it particularly effective as a weapon?
Well, we had to have a direct hit on the tracks, of course. That's the instruction we always used to give, because we knew it was wouldn't be much good against sort of direct armor plating. And we used to do instruction where you know, it was more daredevil than anything else, telling Rose to get down and wait. Almost say the white of the driver's eyes before we fired the fire. And then, of course, we used to instruct them to just do aim at the tracks, of course. Because otherwise, you know, we just used to think, well, if we blew the tracks off, then it was fairly, well, did a good job, of course, then. But, no, I don't think it would have been very effective, to be honest. To be honest, I would imagine it needed a hell of a lot of courage to get close enough to have a go at it, to be honest. But those are the sort of things we did, you know, we used to do night assaults and all that sort of thing, you know. I think that everybody was sort of getting more into the swing of infantry training then, of course, you know, they were.
Did the stem gun arrive while you were doing this?
No, I can't remember the stem gun arriving then. I think it came after that, when I was down in Folkestone or later on.
What?
I think it would be later on, this thing.
What were you teaching these people about the hand grenade that you mentioned?
Well, at Bransford, of course, it was mainly instructing these potential NCOs there on how to handle the, you know, how to clean it in the first place, which was most important, which unfortunately never got adequately carried out at times. I'll tell you a story about that later on, of course, when I was weapon training sergeant. But we used to instruct on the how to throw it, you know, how to potentially get more effect on how to throw it more effectively, you know, sort of the wide arm lob and that sort of thing, you know. And how, you know, as I say, how to clean it, the different types of fuels, 4 second, no, mostly 4 second, I think. 4 second and 6 second, but the way he was most, the 4 second fuels, I think, was the one that was more popular. And then, of course, we started getting the phosphorus, the phosphorus grenades in then at that time, I would think. And then the Bakelite ones, we used to get they were all sort of coming along around about that time, I think, you know. And
the phosphorus grenade you mentioned, what was its potential? What was it aimed for?
Well, it was really aimed to cripple people with the phosphorus, of course, because it created burns and, you know. We didn't do a great deal of training on mines, I remember, on personnel mines. We didn't ever seem to do any training on them.
It must have been quite dangerous to handle grenades.
No, it was.
Were there any accidents in your knowledge?
I was wounded, actually, when I was weapon training sergeant. What we used to do, we used to march, when I went down to Folkestone. There was a weapon training sergeant and a weapon training officer. And all we did, of course, was when the blokes marched out to the firing range, which was about 4 or 5 miles away from Shorncliffe, the night before, maybe before we started, the night before, when they were doing grenade throwing, they used to do it on a company basis. And they were all issued with the boxes of grenades. I think there was about 12 grenades in a box. And they were all very heavily greased, you know, with Vaseline or petroleum jelly or some type of grease anyway. And the night before, that was the job of the recruits, to make sure that the grenades were clean, which meant that they had to dismantle dismantle the grenade, and make sure it was clean. And unfortunately, some of them were clean better than others and some worse than others. And as weapon training sergeant, and the officer, we had the job of dismantling any grenades that failed to go off, which was often, in fact. Because if they were throwing them into long grass and they hadn't been cleaned properly, as I say, we had the job, if they failed to go off, we had the job of finding them and dismantling them. And we developed a drill, this officer and I, where if there were a few hadn't gone off, and if there were maybe everybody threw three grenades. So you were throwing a hell of a lot of grenades. And we were notified as to, you know, we tried to keep abreast of how many had failed to go off. We used to have this system where you had 4 second fuses, I remember. And you could hear them click. If you got near them, you know, and you disturbed them, and you heard the click, that was ready to go off. We had 4 seconds. We just used to shout, "Run!" That was it, "Run!" And of course, if the grenade bear was, you know, sort of here, we used to run, you know, naturally away from the grenade bear. And unfortunately, one day, this officer shouted, "Run!" And I ran. And I didn't run very fast enough. I was just sort of diving down, and I got this bit through my upper arm, just up in here, just a bit of shrapnel, of course. And that was the first time I'd been sort of wounded, like, you know, with any force at all. Like, it was just like a flesh wound, really. Like, it went into my upper arm, but it went to the MO and that sort of thing. Didn't put me off jokes at all. Maybe a couple of days or something like that. But that was the job, the weapon training sergeant. One of the jobs, in fact. The other job, of course, is that when they went on firing exercises, either LMJ or whatever, the officer used to take charge of the firing point, and I used to take charge of the boots. And of course, then we had the job of organising all the pay stubs and all that sort of thing, you know. And the weapon training officer was in charge of the firing point. And of course, then we had to do all the make sure that rifles were all clear and all that sort of thing before they marched back to barracks. But it was a good job, really, because in one sense we didn't do any guard duties. Really, it was fairly cushy, like, you know, because we used to go out in the Land Rover or used to go out in the truck, and then the blokes used to march out, so we just used to meet them, you know, when they were ready. We used to meet them on the range. And then they used to march back, and we just used to go back in the truck, so it was fairly cushy, like, in that sense. But it didn't last all that long, unfortunately.
Just before we go on with that, you mentioned the grease that they had on grenades. Yeah. What was the method of getting it off?
Well, you just used to give them cloths. And,
just for the rag?
Yeah.
So it would take quite a bit of cleaning to get them really clean.
Yeah, well, that was the problem, I think, that... they didn't seem to have anything other than just bits of Gobito and stuff to clean them off. And if one body was a bit soil, it didn't go off, that was it. Unfortunately, we had to look for it. But we used to demolish them with a bit of gun cotton, you know, and a bit of fuse, and that was it, you know.
How long were you at Bransworth before you moved?
I think I moved from Bransworth in early 1942, I think it would be.
And you went down to replace this weapon sergeant?
Yeah, I went down to replace this lad that got killed, in fact, as weapon training sergeant. So it was a very quick promotion, as far as I was concerned, a good promotion. because I didn't even get to be Lance Sergeant, you know what I mean? I was full sergeant straight away. And as I said, it was a good job because all I did was follow the blokes out of to the range and then, you know, act with the weapon training style officer.
Who was that?
And we used to, oh no. He was a lieutenant, actually. No. Might have been a fellow called Whittaker, I'm not sure, man. I'm not particularly good on names, but...
But your role was well, just weapon training.
That, well, other than that, they were then forming the 16th Battalion, of course. At least it had been formed in Edinburgh, right? And they'd gone to Thetford. And from Thetford down to Forks. But it was still very much a training battalion. They were getting intakes in all the time and that sort of thing. And our brief was to go around the classes, you know, because the sergeants and that were still on instructing people, you know, on drill and weapons and all. And we used to sort of just stand and make sure they were given a correct lesson and all this sort of thing. So it was very much a sort of a, well, supernormally post, I suppose, that we did. And we just used to wander around different towns and listen in and then offer advice, you know, if the sergeant or the corporal or that wasn't giving them what we thought was proper tuition. We used to sort of intervene and, you know, maybe take over for the lesson and that sort of thing. So it was good, in fact, you know, at that time I thought it was great. Like,
what was Shauncliffe like as a posting?
Oh, Shauncliffe was quite good, old fashioned barracks, I remember. In fact, oddly enough, the first person I met when I went down to Shauncliffe, I was allocated this, you know, in the barrack, in the room, in the barrack, in the sergeant's house. No, I think I'm just in the barrack room. Was a bloke called Jack Horseman. And he was a real weirdo, really, you know, I mean, all right, he'd been a great fella, I suppose. And I, of course, I knew him, I didn't know him, but I knew of him, because he lived in Howden and I lived in Crook, so he wasn't a million miles away at home, you know what I mean, a couple of miles away. But he was a real weirdo to bunk with, I was bunking with him in this block, to be honest. He had me, I was really nervous for him, in fact, because you never knew what the hell he was going to do next, you know.
What kind of things did he get up to?
Well, he always said to me, he's had this bloody habit of it. He was always buggering on with his rifle and you know, you never knew what the hell he was going to do with it next. He was a real cracker, you know, he was really.
And he was
really a queer fella.
He was the man who'd escaped.
He escaped through Spain or somewhere.
That's right. He had quite a story in itself.
He was a real.
He'd received some very bad treatment.
So I'm not denigrating the fella for, you know, don't misunderstand me. But he was a real queer chap to bunk with, to you know. Well, you know, I maybe no doubt it affected him, you know. But I wasn't to know that, of course, at that time. No, I didn't stay with him long, maybe a week or two, but I was really pleased when he went somewhere else. I don't know, you know, he seemed to disappear quickly. And I was rather relieved, to be honest, when he went.
What other work were you doing down there?
Well, that was about it at that time. And then, for some reason, this weapon training sergeant and officer came off the establishment. And I was given a platoon. And I took over as platoon sergeant. 17th platoon, I remember.
Which company was that?
that would be day company. And I took over 17 platoon.
What were your duties now as a platoon sergeant?
Well, I then became available for guard duty and that sort of thing, so it widened my... It was a backward step in that sense, that, it was more onerous as far as I was concerned, because I was then available, like everybody else, for guard duties. And, the general training, because we were still in the process of very much soft training. But of course, then we were getting more fade training. We were doing skeins and that sort of thing, night skeins and that sort of thing. So it was a very full life, as far as the training was concerned.
Who was commanding the battalion?
I haven't done really clear at that time now. I remember the company commander was a bloke called. Whelan, I think, Captain Whelan, I think, was the company commander.
Do you remember your platoon commander?
Bloke called, I think, the bloke I had was bloke called Kelly. Yeah, I think Kelly.
Were there air raids on your area?
No, I was getting shelled. Oddly enough, from the long range guns, there's a few shells used to come over now and again, and there's quite one block was really badly damaged with these long range shells, but I can't recall any areas as such. No, it was just a shelling, very very occasionally, mind. But we did get shells now and again, yeah.
Do you recall any major exercises that you were on in
1942? We used to do the duties on the course, We used to do the guard duties down the course as well, from forks, around to we allocated certain areas along the course, And we did that later on, of course, when we went to Winchelsea. We moved from the battalion, once it was sort of outside the scope of a training battalion, it was like a training unit. We moved then as sort of more like a recognised fighting battalion, I suppose. And we then moved to Winchelsea, and we used to do guard duties on the along the same walls. In Rye, he used to march down to Rye, march as a detachment, guard duty for mostly from Rye along the course, further along the course towards Dover, that area. And that was one of the main things, in fact, really, at that time, was I suppose when they thought the German invasion was going to be imminent, that was one of the most important duties, I think, the guard duties along the same wall.
And were these in fixed positions, or was it patrolling?
No, mostly used to do just like used to do about 3 miles back, 3 miles one way, 3 miles back, so along the course, There were fixed positions, of course, but the most I recall was the marching along there,
The
from
coast
one point to another, just along the coast, road, and the sea wall. We used to march on the top of the sea wall, actually. They used to patrol along the dunes and march. They used to patrol along the top of the sea wall.
And the beach presumably would be wired and mined.
The beach was wired and mined. Yeah.
The housing along the frontage was that? Did that still have civilians in it?
No, most of them had been there. I remember we went to. Get what they call it, really, yes. It's a popular beauty spot now. And all the people had been taken away, the place was absolutely empty.